Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Right now, we'll have the talk performance tuning tips for Apache Spark machine learning workloads by Sriharsh. Sorry for the name.
No problem.
Yen, senior staff software engineer from IBM Power System Performance. Just to remind you that we'll have time at the end for questions. Please just wait until I hand over the mic so everything gets properly recorded. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. This is Harsha. So today I'm going to talk about performance tuning tips for Spark on IBM platform, on Open Power platform. So basically, we're going to talk about, you know, initially Spark overview, then why I'm choosing Open Power for that, and then briefly talk about Open Power design, and then actually what you know, research we have done. That's what I'm going to talk about, and then a final demo. Demo will be likely covered by Amir. Yeah. So as you all would know, Apache Spark is a in-memory data processing engine, which is does all the data analytics jobs very easily with most of the libraries are available for everybody to use. SparkSQL, streaming, MLlib, and graphics computation. So there are many languages that are available also. You can work with Spark, R, Scala, Java, Python. So as you know very well, Hadoop is, Spark is used as a substitute for Hadoop for getting almost 10x and more performance with Spark. And basically, the application you're running on Spark cluster or standalone, you would have the driver program, which is the master node. It drives all the jobs that are assigned by the application on the worker nodes, where worker nodes actually do the job of your application. So generally, the cluster manager, it allocates all the jobs and tasks that are assigned by the application onto the cluster. And we can use file systems like HDFS or many other storages that are you want to use, HBase or Hive or whatever it is. So there are many challenges today with the data analytics and big data. So where the Moore's law is no more valid because you have a huge amount of data and the processing power is less. And with time, it is getting even very difficult to manage that. So there's a need for improving the entire stack, firmware, accelerator, software, storage, and network, and also structure, unstructured data. So for our research, I've been working with the Open Power Consortium, the ecosystem, which is founded in 2013 by Google, Mellanox, Trayan, and NVIDIA, of course, IBM. So this is very similar to Apache open source foundation we have. So it's been many companies are joined this, and they are developing servers based on IBM processors now. So I want to talk more about why I choose Open Power for my research. Not only me, there are team members, Raj and everybody who have been working on this. So data is streamed from various sources, the media sources, which has to be managed well with a better performance. So for that, we have been, the IBM servers are highly threaded, the open power systems, and are very concurrent. So that is helping in data processing of all this IBM data analytics applications, workloads in the market or from the various social media sources. So other reason is today, time is everything. We have less time to do We book an Ola or a cab for everything. We have less time, and we are not patient enough to wait for things to come. So we have to. So we have technologies that support, and with open power systems having very good bandwidth, memory bandwidth, and large caches are definitely with high throughput are helping us to cater to these needs. So this includes not only for the Uber or Ola I talked about, and time is less for things, and also for social media entertainment like Facebook or Twitter or any such things. They need more data frames where the data frameworks there. You could need to process your data faster. So for that, we need we can use open power systems for which are more balanced across the data nodes that you use in the cluster, which give better performance and throughput. And you can easily vary the SMT modes to from 2 to 8, 2, 4, and 8, respectively. So the last thing I would talk about is why open power is because if you have a cluster, the load is distributed and consistent across the data nodes. It's more efficient, well manages the scale out of the data that you have across the nodes, and also multi-tenant deployment. What exactly we mean by that is we have a single application and we can distribute that across different clients or customers serving the same thing and better utilization of these. So for that, it's more supports the, you can't change the application code as such, but you can change the business rules or the UI of the application. That can be done with multi-tenancy. That's our advantage with that. So of course, for our research, we have used BigTop, which is used basically easily to deploy your Spark on Hadoop and Spark on your workload on your Spark and Hadoop environment. So that's very easy to manage things, which makes any developer's job very easy to deploy these environments and test their workloads easily. So here we have, open power basically uses power 8, and we have power 9 coming up next. So this is has all the features like CAPI. It is 12 cores for two socket system with 8 threads, 2 to 8 threads, SMT threads. And we have CAPI and also NVLink. So those features which are really boosting the performance of the application. CAPI is basically coherent accelerator process interface, which bypasses the device driver to reduce the latency in order to talk to your memory subsystem. So that, in a way, reduces a lot of latency, almost 1/3 of the PCI bus that we use in most of the servers. So here are some of the methodology that we follow for this performance tuning in Spark, on Spark for the given application. So we are basically using something called matrix factorization application, which is very much used in the recommender systems for collaborative filtering. So that is a good workload to choose because it is very memory intensive, and because of a lot of Spark shuffles that happen. That's the reason I would choose this, which is a good representative of the workloads. So alternating least squares is a algorithm that is used for collaborative filtering. Basically, you have, suppose you have a Amazon customer who's trying to buy a product, and Amazon wants to know what user really prefers to buy. So the product doesn't know what user would like to buy. So So there are many unknown variables about the end user. And so we use this alternate least square algorithm to come to that, based on some of the history and basic data about the customer, end customer. So before I talk about this, some of the Spark basics are needed. So how are you going to optimize a given workload on Spark, on OpenPAR, or any cluster for that sake? So we have Spark executor instances. These are all Spark tunables, Spark executor cores, executor memory, shuffle location and manager, RD% storage level. So what we think is most of the guys who are working on Spark to optimize their workload on Apache Spark on OpenPAR or any cluster, we try to think that there are many tunables of Spark, and you need to do a lot of experiments, iterations to find what is the best that you can get for your application. So the best that's a way of the top down approach. So we are following something called bottom approach, where you would we're trying to monitor the resource usage of the application, and then trying to see what tunable fits into the particular workload, which would boost or enhance the performance. So this is what I was talking about. You have a large number of Spark tunables, and you need to configure multiple ways to get the best performance. So that, and then the other way that we are trying to follow is the top-down approach, where you're characterizing the workload based on the resource monitoring of the workload or the application on the cluster, and then custom tune the Spark for your need so that you get roofline performance. I call it roofline performance because it is, with less number of tunables, you're achieving the performance much faster. So, of course, there are drawbacks in this. I will talk about it later. So this is a roofline performance. So basically, it works with the characterization of the workload, and then there could be fundamental inefficiency in this. But with less number of iterations, you are going to get the best performance. So that would be an out-of-box performance that you usually get with the top-down approach. So we can get something good enough performance, but we have to reduce the time or the iterations and get much better performance faster. So that is roofline. And how are we going to do that? We have a performance navigation automation script, which basically you set one worker per data node, and then assign executed cores on each data node equal to number of logical CPUs on your data node. For example, you have a 10-core system with SMT8, it would be 80 threads. So I would set one worker on the data node and 80 executed cores on the data node cluster. I'm talking about only one data node here. If you have multiple data nodes, then you can form a cluster and tune accordingly for that. So what you're trying to do is we're going to do a systematic search on the tunable configuration tunables so that you can quickly arrive at best performance. So this is the workload I was talking about, max factorization, where very well the machine learning workload, whatever. I think most of you guys already know about what is a machine workload, but I would like to brief a small talk. So it is max factorization is a way of, as I told in an example with Amazon, you have multiple variables, but you don't have enough input of the user to predict about what would the end user buy. So So this is data that we collect from SparkBench. It has Spark matrix factorization and train the data, validate, and predict. So we are just basically creating a data set from the SparkBench using on Hadoop file system. So data is on the Hadoop file system. So this is giving you the data set, details about the data set we are going to use in our research. So this is, we have about 62,000 rows in the data, and same in columns. Data set is 100 GB. That's the data size of the data set. So this is the Spark configuration that we're using. As I said, this is a 7-node cluster with one master and 6 data nodes. So we have executor per node. That's what executor node is the number of executor instances that I'm assigning on the each data node. And we, on each data node, we are trying 80 threads, 40 threads, and 24, because we are using SMT8, SMT4, and SMT2, respectively. So the shuffle location is HDDs, and also we have shuffle manager, where you can use hash base, sort base, or tungsten sort base of shuffling the data after the map phase in the reduce phase. So this shows API calls from different stages or of the jobs of the Spark. So you could find in some cases multiple API calls. That's because one or more stages could be part of a job. So there are 7 jobs here. So in case of 6 and 7, we have multiple API calls. That's because, as I said, number of stages in the job. So in this workload here, this shows the execution of the jobs over time. So as I said, in a job, you could have multiple stages. So we have 4, 5, and 6 stacked one upon other. So in summary, I'm just giving you overview of all the data set and the API calls, and you have the Spark configuration and the jobs that are, you can see in the Spark UI, how exactly the jobs are executed and distributed when you're doing your run. So this talks about the configuration, the various configurations we did. So the first configuration is basically we are trying to do the resource monitoring of the application. So that from that, we are trying to get what exactly is affecting the performance here. So Spark Executor Code is 80 GC options. We have set it default and RD compression true, the storage level. So I was talking about storage level. So basically, before that, I would like to give a info on why, how data is partitioned across the cluster. Data is partitioned into, you can create data from RDDs from the HDFS file system that is distributed across partitions. On each data node, you will have an RDD. So easily distributed data set, that's how Spark distributes the workflow across. And so number of partitions plays a big role in tuning your workload or the application. So with 40 runtime threads, logical CPUs we have used, we did not really find a good performance. So we tried out with, as you can see, the 7, 8, and 9 configurations that has a different number of partitions. So with that, we still not able to find good performance. So with by monitoring, I would like to go to further slides here. So this is the configuration 1 CPU utilization. So you can see the CPU utilization has come down in between. That's because of we could find from the Spark stage Spark UI. That's basically because of the GC garbage collection that's happening. So then we moved out, trying to segregate the GC apart by using tungsten salt, which would alleviate, garbage collection by using binary processing and completely obviating the Java memory model. So the number of partitions of the data you make on the Spark cluster and tungsten salt is playing a big role in improving your performance. And thereby we can see with the configuration 11 in the next slide, where you see a better memory, scope for memory utilization. That in that way we could achieve better performance because we are using less number of threads, 24, and GC overhead is removed, and we are using tungsten salt, and the number of partitions is 1,000. So we are as I said, the major role is played by this performance improvement is the tungsten salt data partitioning, and the data partitioning number that you choose is very crucial. That would make better utilization of your cluster resource that you have in terms of computing or memory. So that is the main part that would play a big role in performance gain for your application. So we can see the GC footprint, memory footprint across various configurations I talked about, 1, 4, and 9, 11. 11 is the best performance you're getting, just 47 seconds, where the baseline was 12 minutes. So the GC, there's no GC initially, the high GC for 40 threads, and then we have the parallel GC used with 24 threads. The GC has come down drastically with use of tungsten salt. So here you can see the details of the shuffle and the GC time, the configuration that you use in Spark stages. You can see this in the Spark UI. So in summary, how exactly you're going to tune your workload is the use of, basically characterize your workload, whether it is CPU intensive, memory intensive, or IO intensive. If it is, then find out a roofline performance by properly searching the number of partitions you're going to do of the data, and trying to obviate any of the GC problems or the I missed one point here. The floor plan cluster resourcing. So that is, we assign one GC thread for application thread you are using. In that way, it would be usually, so basically by setting one worker per data node, you have setting one JVM on the data node, and you're assigning 80 executor cores. You're basically using all the threads that are available in the data node. So it's always better to set one GC thread per core. So that gives, that's what in our research we have found that has to be is giving the best performance. So if it is IO bound or memory bound, then you're gonna make it more CPU intensive by using more resource and properly dividing your search space with regions which are really causing the performance bottleneck is what you have to find and assign tunables respectively to get best performance. So, but still, this may not be applicable for all the workloads. We have, of course, tried many workloads and found that this generic roofline performance methodology is really working, but there are cases where tungsten salt may not be, or the number of partitions that you're doing may not really help you to get the best performance of your application on the cluster you're using. So for that, we have the accelerated technology. I was talking about CAPI on OpenPower, that is formed by many of the members like Mellanox, NVIDIA, and IBM. So this basically, we are also coming up with Power 9. With this, as I said, we are trying to include GPUs along with the CPU, which would be really help in boosting your performance by offloading all those more CPU-intensive workloads to GPUs. So in that way, you would achieve the performance you have. So NVIDIA is playing a big role there. So you can see that the conventional PCI bus that you're using is just giving you the 16 GB per second system speed, bus speed, which is to talk to your application with the GPU and CPU system memory. So that is being simplified with NVLink. NVLink is high-speed data bus that is used with 40 GB per second speed. So you're getting totally about 160 GB per second. So that is, you talk to the processor and then to your system memory. So that is giving you a lot of performance boost. Almost one third the conventional way. Sorry. So many of the members have already been developing servers based on this OpenPower processor technology. For example, IBM has its own Minsky, and you have Google Rackspace behind server called Zaz that's recently announced in October. So also we have Zoom server and Bricks systems that's been announced by Chinese companies, Zhaohu. So this is really helping these capabilities like CAPI, NVLink, offloading your CPU load to the GPUs, really giving you the needs of your end customer for performance, high performance. So this is, we have reached a point where my colleague could take over and he would give a demo of GPU's performance.
Thanks. Done a great job, but I learned a lot.
I don't know how to remove this.
Can you guys hear me? Do I need a speaker?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Dick.
Again, my name is Amir Sanjar, and I'm a big data solution architect at IBM. So I use a lot of his finding because I didn't believe it. I said, okay, I'm gonna go and prove it. So we did this demo to prove that we didn't waste our money on him. And he actually came out pretty true. One thing I like to say about GPU is that GPU is not for general purpose workload, okay? Using GPU is for something very computational intensive, all right? That is the key, and that is why we decide to use it for machine learning, okay? So just to add to what he said, yeah, GPU is good, but make sure you're using the right workload on it. Otherwise, you might actually lose performance, okay? So in this demo, we're basically demoing adverse drug reaction. In a nutshell, it means you have a drug A, drug B, if you're gonna die or not. I mean, we're gonna predict that. Or if you don't die, how badly you're gonna feel the next day. So for this demo, we use multiple data sources, historical data, a medical record that already has what drug react to what drug and what severity of it going to be. Your history actually can play a major role in it. So we use a different type of data ingest. They all had a different format, and we fit it into the Spark. And we offload Spark machine learning, just building the model, not the validating, just building the model to the GPU, and then we did a prediction. So that's the flow on the left side. On the right side, top right, you will see there are two roles. The top one is just running it without a GPU, okay? We got the data ingest, We create a model, we validate it, and then we did the prediction. So as you notice, that is still running. In the bottom row, we're doing the exact same workload, but what we did, we replaced the machine learning library, we modified the machine learning library to use NVIDIA GPU, okay? Just for the logistic regression part. And that is the red box. And as you can see, the difference in time. Power 8, just CPU, took 707 seconds, whereas Power 8 with GPU took just 30 seconds. This is significant. Imagine you're in a pharmacy or doctor office or in an emergency room. They want to see what medication you have taken and what the result has been. You don't want to wait. Second is life, basically. So GPU is making a significant enhancement in this. And actually, we did this research by IBM Research and some of the hospitals. And what we have done going to help, like University of Atlanta Medical Center, it's going to help them to save life. Just to emphasize what he said, Moore's Law, how many of you knows what the Moore's Law is? Okay, good. Moore's Law basically said CPUs every 2 years going to double in performance. That's in a nutshell. I know some people say 1.5 or whatever. But that is not happening. When was the last time CPUs got double the performance? 2007? So we basically, CPUs are not getting faster. We keep adding thread and everything, shoving everything down the CPU, but it's not getting faster. So the real solution for future is accelerators. And one of the accelerators is GPU. And that's basically this demo. So any question? Any question for him?
Any questions for me?
He's the brain here.
By the way, this is my first talk at an international place and on Apache conference.
So we're going to have all his results on a website and go through them. Trust me, I'll be validated. It works. If you have any question or suggestion, please get back to us and we've modified our result and to double check.
Yeah. So no more questions? Any question? Please give these guys a round of applause.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.